Hello and welcome to another magical conversation. I'm so happy to be here talking with you guys. Now that I'm working, I do this podcast like from 2 weeks, like week yes, week no, and I really miss it. This is such a authentic and safe space for me. I love coming here, putting all of this together, like cleaning up this space, lighting up the candles, talking truthfully and authentically, because I feel like in my life I don't have space to be authentic, and I don't have space to be myself. I think being myself can be very triggering to a lot of people, and I don't feel safe to speak my truth and be who I am. And this is such a safe place for me and a place that I love. Doing this podcast, I think, is my favorite form of content because it is so authentic and so truthful to me. And to be able to express myself as I am without filters, it's so liberating and it's so fulfilling. Because, yes, right now that I'm working, imagine I'm very grateful for my job, and most of the people are nice, but I do feel like me in social environments can be triggering for people. And of course, like in a social environment, you always have people that are nice and are sweet, and there's like some of them that are not as kind and not as, great. And I've been trying to navigate that in my work. I've been trying to protect my peace, protect myself, and trying to focus on the people that are nice and kind and compassionate, right? And I'm saying this, and it's nothing special, right? It's not like nothing big. The people that are not as nice, one, they are not many. They are probably like two of them that I'm like, I don't know. But I'm trying to navigate that because I do feel that or people love me or people hate me. And I'm okay with both. Like, I don't mind people disliking me. I do mind when they kind of go out of their way to trying to, like, not be as nice to me, to try to kind of not annoy me, but trying to go into my space and kind of disrespect my social boundaries of, like, hey, if I want to talk to you, I talk to you. If I don't want to talk to you, I don't talk to you, and kind of respect that, right? And I've been trying to navigate that in my work because, yes, I do feel I'm a very, very polarizing person. I think I'm a very healing person, but healing is not easy, and healing comes through a lot of triggers. And I think, like, the people, I think I can trigger people very easily, but it's how people react to their own triggers, right? I do feel like there's a lot of people that appreciate that and are grateful for me and embrace their own triggers as a source of inspiration. But I do feel like a lot of people as well, I'm not saying a lot of people, a loud minority, right, that feels triggered by me, and they project their insecurities on me. And imagine I go to work and I really just try to mind my business. I'm not trying to make anybody uncomfortable. I'm not trying to express myself to the point of triggering people, but I'm a very triggering person. I think I'm a very healing person, and it's how people react to their own healing. So I do feel like a lot of people like put me on a pedestal, and this can be from a source of inspiration or from a source of jealousy. And I think there are some people that really cannot handle me and they feel very jealous. And just by existing, I don't think I'm even doing anything. I really try to mind my business. I'm really trying to go there, be nice to people, be kind. But I think some people, maybe seeing other people show me like love, care, and compassion, because there are a lot of them that do appreciate me. And I do feel like a lot of times I get maybe very polarizing, right? Or I get a very good treatment from some people that maybe go out of their way to help me, to be kind to me. And there are other people that do the opposite, right? They go out of the way to kind of put me down because I think they are triggered and they put me on some sort of pedestal. And I think they're a bit like jealous of the person that I am. So I've been trying to like protect my peace. That is something that, imagine, in the past, I think I gave a lot of people second chances. And now I'm not a second chance type person anymore because I've realized that people show you who they are. And for people to change, it takes a lot of time and inner work and effort for them to change, right? Someone doesn't change just because you express their emotions and say, hey, I don't like when you do this, or I don't feel good when you do that, right? That's not how people change. And I think in the past, I kind of second guessed myself and like that concept of giving people second chances. I think second chances is valid when people do the work and a long time has passed for them to look into themselves and do their own healing. But I don't think people change overnight. At least I didn't, right? It took me years to change. It takes a lot of time alone, inner work, seeing your own darkness for you to be able to change as a person, right? And I'm grateful that I've reached a point that now I'm not mean to people at all. I'm just cold. If somebody, doesn't treat me the nicest, like I'm not going to give you a second chance. I'm not going to try to make this happen. I'm not going to pander to you and I'm not going to try to make you feel comfortable. I'm going to be cold. Like I'm not going to interact with you a lot. I'm not going to probably even look your way, right? And that's, I think, a big lesson that I learned that is, people are who they are, right? And I think a lot comes from unconditional acceptance. Hey, people are who they are. I'm not going to try to change them. It's not my job to try to change them, right? And that's, I also think that trying to change people, what is not healthy for me, but it's also not healthy for them, right? I kind of need to accept people for who they are. And if they are a person that I don't like to interact with that much, I'm not going to interact with you, right? And that's a part of me unconditionally accepting you. I'm not judging you. I think everyone is their own person. Everyone has people for them. I don't think you need to like everyone, and I don't think everyone needs to like you, right? You just need to find the people that do like you. And accept the people that do like you and put your energy into them and not into the other people. And I think that's something that I've done a lot in the past and I'm grateful that I've changed. That is trying to put energy into people that did not even like me to begin with. And I think because in the past, imagine, it's like someone doesn't accept you and someone doesn't like you. And instead of accepting that, what I was doing is trying to make them like me, right? Trying to pander to them, trying to praise them, trying to make them feel comfortable, right? And I think that put me in a lot of toxic dynamics with people and that put me in a lot of toxic relationships. Instead of just accepting what is and being like, okay, this person is not for me and that's okay. I don't need to change myself to fit into your insecurities. I don't need to change myself to appease your ego, right? And I'm very grateful that I've changed that way of being because I think there is a lot of discourse of give people a second chance, give a person another chance just because yes. Again, I think it's super valid to give a person a second chance if they did their inner work and if they took the time to look into themselves and heal, I think that's valid. But I'm not going to give a person a second chance just because, yes, just because I decided that no, I want this person to change, so I'm going to give them a second chance. And I realize it does not work like that, and I'm grateful for that. I think protecting my peace is something that I feel very grateful for. But I do think I have this pressure from society to be the one that is pleasing other people, right? I think we all have this pressure, like, you should be the one to forgive, even if they did nothing to ask for forgiveness. You should be the one to give second chances, even if they did nothing to deserve those second chances. Like, it is the person that was hurt that needs to fix the things and that needs to appease to the status quo. And I think it's very much that. It's like maintaining the status quo. I think people really have this need and almost put this pressure of appeasing to the status quo, right? Maintaining the same old thing, even if it's not the healthiest, even if it's not the best thing, right? And I'm not anymore appeasing to the status quo. I'm not going to go against it. Like, I'm not going to put my energy, my time to try to change the status quo. No, again, that's not my job. My job is not trying to change, right? And I think that's not a perspective that is healthy for me or for the other people, right? But I also, I'm not going to, like, put myself down to be in the status quo. If I don't agree with the status quo, I'm just going to distance myself. And that distance, a lot of times, can be physical, right? But when it's not physical, it's really with less interaction and less energy spent on maybe like the more toxic parts of a system. And I'm really saying this is nothing special, right? I'm just sharing like my perspectives of social environments, right? And my perspectives of interacting with people, because I do want to save my energy, one, for myself and for the people that are aligned with me, for the people that share the same perspective and life perspective and mindsets than me, because otherwise it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense me spending my energy on people that don't. I think in the past I made that mistake, and now I'm happy that I have boundaries, even though that these boundaries can be perceived as cold to some people and as something that I shouldn't be doing, but I'm very grateful that I am doing it. So I've been navigating this job situation and social interaction the best way that I can. And it's really easy in this job. Like, most of the people are really nice and understanding. I think there is also a lot of alignment in, for example, being a foreigner and being in an international environment. I think people that do move to another country and do seek a different experience share similar values. And I'm really grateful, actually, that I surround myself and I, because I'm international, right, because I'm a foreigner on the country that I am, that usually we end up in the same circles. We end up in circles of being international. And I think we share like similar values of open-mindedness, acceptance, that I think that's something that I struggle in my own country, because I felt like in my own country, there was this very narrow-minded way of seeing the world and of living life. And I never agree with that. It was never my vibe. And I think I struggled a lot with the close-mindedness of it all, with the judgment as well of like, people should be this way and you should do this thing and you should have this type of life, right? You should take your degree, find a 9-to-5, get married, have kids, have that lifestyle, right? And I think I always struggled in my own country with that mindset, because I did want to explore. I wanted to explore myself, right? I wanted to explore my possibilities. I did not want to live life just because everyone was living life a certain way. I wanted to figure out what was my way of living life. How did I want to create a life around me according to my own values? What I perceive as valuable to me and not what people said and impose, like, this is what you should be doing, right? And I'm very grateful that I surround myself with international environment that I do think is very open-minded, because you're coming from a completely different culture, a completely different set of beliefs, and you're putting yourself in this environment. It's because you are open-minded in nature. It's because you are seeking that open-mindedness and interacting with different cultures, people from different backgrounds. I do find it very interesting and fulfilling. I do like to know, like, where people came from, what's their history, like, what's their country, where is their life story, right? Because I do find it very interesting, the different sets of, yeah, beliefs, cultures. And I do appreciate a lot the open-mindedness of it all, of accepting a different set of beliefs and culture, and of being open to a different way of thinking. I do appreciate that, but to some degree, I always feel like it is hard for me to have space to be myself, like truly myself. I go to work and I keep things surface level, right? And I saw this creator that made a post talking about, for example, when you're expressing how you feel and when you're expressing yourself authentically and people say things like, it's not that serious. I get that a lot. When I am expressing myself authentically and fully, right, because I like to talk about life and perspectives of life and ways of seeing the world, I do like to talk about things that are deeper than the surface level, right? And what I get a lot from people, and that's also non-negotiable for me, that's usually when I walk away, that is, it's not that deep. And I'm not judging anybody that likes to live in surface level, that's okay, but don't judge me for wanting to live life deeply. I personally take my life seriously. I take myself seriously. I take the way that I see the world, I interact with the world very seriously, because it's how I see myself. Like, I'm not gonna live a life just because, yes, I do want to live a life with purpose and fulfillment. I do like to talk about deep things. I do like to talk about profound topics because that's what I enjoy. That's who I am. And for me, I like to see life with meaning than with no meaning. And I'm not judging anybody that likes to live life in a more surface level, but that is just not me, right? And I do understand that the status quo, the normality, is to live life in surface level, right? Is to talk about surface level topics, is to not think too seriously about things, not think too profoundly about things, and that's okay. But I do feel I lack space for me to be myself, because that is myself to my core. This is who I am. This is what I like to talk about. This is the way that I see the world. And it does bring me so much joy, the person that I am. Imagine, it's like, I love the person that I am, like alone in my mind, the way that I see the world. It's not that I don't love the person I am when I am with people, but I do feel there is no space for me. There is no space for me to be authentic. I kind of have to put on this mask of surface level, keeping things on surface level, talking about surface level topics that honestly bring me no interest. Is a bit boring to me, but I'm not judging anybody, right? Just because it is for me doesn't mean it is for you, and that's totally okay. That's why I'm so grateful for this podcast and for this space, because this is truly like the only space I have to express myself authentically, to talk about my deep, profound topics that nobody cares about. But I am finding people that do care about it. And that's another thing, like, I don't say people in my real life, I don't talk about Lord Indolandia on my podcast, because I don't want to impose my ideals in other people. I don't want to impose my way of being on people that don't resonate with it. I want to naturally and organically find the people that do resonate with me. I'm not trying to change people again. I'm not trying to impose my values. I'm trying to find the people that already share the similar values. And I think for me, building this space and building this community is finding the people that do resonate with me. Me having a space of being authentic and expressing my truth and expressing myself authentically is opening myself to finding the people that do resonate with me. So everyone that comments, everyone that resonates, I do feel very grateful, because I think that's a rarity to find your people, right? I think it's a rarity to be authentic and finding the people that resonate with your authenticity. And I'm very grateful for this space and doing this podcast. I miss it a lot. When I come here, I get so happy. And when I come here, I really go with the intention, Laurinda, be truthful. Express yourself truthfully, be authentic. Even though that I do like have some awkwardness around it, I do come here, I'm like, am I really about to talk about this? Damn, am I really doing this? And I set the intention, I try my best to be authentic, even if I think it's a bit weird or awkward or too much, because I also know these are projections of other people in my mind, right? Even though I have all these feelings around it, or maybe not feeling the most comfortable with being truthful, it is so liberating. It brings me so much joy, even though when I start, it's a bit of awkwardness. And I think you can see it. Like at the beginning of the podcast, I'm way more nervous because I really go into this mindset of, okay, demask yourself, Laurinda. Like, be truthful. Even though that I have all these maybe negative connotations around it, I'm surpassing those negative connotations and I'm facing my fears and I'm saying, yes, maybe this is not the most comfortable to me. More at the beginning. Then at the end of the podcast, I'm already like all happy and all comfortable expressing my truth. But at the beginning, I think I still have that programming of I cannot be myself. Being myself is not safe. Being myself is dangerous, right? And I think I have this belief because in real life, every time that I try to be myself, right? Every time that I try to express myself fully and to speak my truth, I think I got met with a lot of opposition. A lot of people got triggered by it. A lot of people that told me it's not that deep or it's not that serious. Or people that got triggered to the point of projecting their insecurities. Because, yeah, I think people that cannot handle their triggers, they project their insecurities. And I do feel like sometimes they make my life harder than it needs to be. Like they make my day harder than it needs to be, because I do feel like some people, a loud minority, there are not many. I do have, I'm very grateful for having a lot of people that do accept me and do love me and do are inspired by me, right? But I think that loud minority, I got scared of it at some point, because they do go out of their way to make my life harder. And I'm just trying to go through life with the least amount of trouble that I can, with the least amount of chaos that I can. And of course, a lot of it is out of my control and I just need to accept that, right? But protecting my peace has been something that I've been really focusing on. And I'm grateful for it, and I'm not backing down, even if the perception of others is that I shouldn't be doing that or I'm too cold, I'm too this. It's okay. I'd rather be cold and protecting my peace. I'd rather be cold and be at peace in my environment than the opposite. So yeah, these past few weeks I've been navigating this social environment that for me is always a bit difficult. I have a lot of trauma with people, clearly. From this podcast, you understand, right? And also, there's something that I have been trying to heal these past few weeks. That is something that I don't feel yet ready to fully divulge. I don't feel yet ready to fully explain and talk about. But one day I will. But right now, I think I'm still going through the healing journey. That is basically this relationship that I had, what, a year ago with a very manipulative and deceptive person that really traumatized me. This person really traumatized me, but at the same time, I think he opened my eyes to, yeah, accepting people for who they are, not trying to make people be something they are not. Because I feel like, again, you see the world as you see yourself, and I see the world with goodness. And that's my default, right? Is to see people as good and see people as empathetic and compassionate and able to change a lot of that. And I think because that's the person that I am, that's how I see the world. And I think, again, in the past, I made a lot of excuses for a lot of bad behavior. I made a lot of excuses that I shouldn't have made. I made a lot of excuses that led me to be in a toxic environment or be with a toxic person. And I think in my mind, I was always trying to excuse these people. And trying to, yeah, they did something wrong, but maybe they were about having a bad day. Yeah, they treated me poorly. Maybe like they have their traumas, their fears that lead them to be that way. And probably that's truthful. That's the truth. But realizing that, yeah, people are just who they are, and you can change them, and you just have to look at them at face value. And not think, maybe one day they'll change. Maybe if they go through the healing, they'll be able to become a better person, treat me better. No. And I think because of this mindset that I have about myself, that basically makes my worldview and how I view people and how I perceive the world, I think I got to myself again. It's not my fault, right? It's never your fault when you got yourself into a toxic relationship of someone that has manipulated you and deceived you and treat you poorly. Like, it's not your fault that you are in it. And that's is a part of why it's so scary, is that this can happen to everyone. And I got myself into this toxic relationship a year ago. That it was so bad. I haven't been able to process it yet. And I think because right now I'm in a point in my life with more safety. Basically, I think all this time I was like, oh my God, like I need to get a job and not being able to get a job. I was very in survival. So I was pushing this experience to the back of my mind because I was very in survival. Like I have other things to worry about. Like I cannot think about this. Like I'm in survival. I need to find a job. I need to make income, right? And I think because now I feel safer, now that I have a job, I have income. I think because I feel safer, this person and this experience has been haunting my mind. Like I go to sleep and they pop up in my mind, and it was something really traumatic that when it pops up into my mind, like it's really a hard thing to process. I know I'll be able to process it. I know I'll be able to go through the healing journey. I know I'll be able to overcome it. But right now, yeah, this person has been popping out in my mind, and every time he pops out, it's like it's traumatic. Like it's really scary. I still feel like I am in that place, right? And that's how kind of trauma works. If you have not processed it, you still feel like you are living it, even if you are out of it. And imagine this relationship, I think it was only like 1 month, and it only took 1 month for me to like really be traumatized and scarred from it. This was a very like evil person. And in a lot of ways, I took a lot of positives out of that because it really opened my eyes. It really opened my eyes of like, there are really like evil people. It's not everyone, but there are really like deceptive, manipulative people that have zero compassion for others, zero empathy. All they want is to use you. And I was going to say another word, but I can't on YouTube. And I think that I'm very grateful for it because I think he also made me heal from a lot of relationship in my past, realizing, hey, these people are who they are. These people are just people with no compassion or empathy, like evil people that they run their lives through deception and manipulation, and they see people as tools, as objects, instead of someone with compassion and instead of someone with feelings. Yeah, there are some people, again, narcissists, that see people just as an object for them to use, and they don't care about how you feel, they don't care about your free will, they don't care about that. They just care about using you to feed their ego or their plan or whatever it is. And I think going through that experience really made me realize, yeah, there are some people that lack empathy. There are some people that are incapable of that. And I had many of them in my past. And I think I've been excusing these people and trying to make them to be something they are not, like trying to make them more loving and caring and compassionate than they actually are. And I think I carried for a long time a lot of guilt because of that. I felt like I didn't do enough for them to be kind to me. I didn't extend myself enough for them to show compassion and love to me. I wasn't good enough for their love, right? And I think this experience with this person was really traumatic, but it really opened my eyes to be like, oh, people are really this way. And in this person, I saw a reflection of many other people in my life, especially my family. And I realized, oh, like it's not excusable. This is who they are. I don't need to, for example, make my family better people than they actually are, because they are not. I don't need to make excuses for these people because that's not who they are. Because I think making excuses to these people is always being stuck in these toxic environments, right? Making excuses for people that mistreated you and used you and traumatized you, I think it kept me stuck in a lot of this environments and with these people. And I think he almost brought a lot of shame and guilt to myself. Like I didn't do something right enough or good enough to be deserving of some sort of like compassion and some sort of respect and dignity from other people. And this experience to this person made me really realize that it's not about me, it's not me. It is just who they are. There is nothing I could do to make it difference. Like everything I can do is really distance myself, and protect my peace. So this has been something that I'm in the trenches of healing. I have done this many times, so I know the process. Like I'm confident and comfortable in the process, and I trust the process itself. So I know at some point I'll overcome this and I'll be okay. But right now, I'm going through the process of healing this. And yeah, like when you are in the midst of it, when you are amidst of healing and overcoming, it is not easy. It is quite hard. So basically, what I've been doing is I've been trying to journal about this experience, which is so scary because it was so traumatic that I almost don't want to think about it. I almost don't want to think about it and put myself in that place again and relive it, but I know I need to. I need to express it. I need to think about it. So I've been journaling like every night about this experience that I had with this person. So like I can sleep at night, right? Because what happens to me is that if I don't journal it, if I don't express it, I go to bed and this person pops out in my mind, like when I'm trying to go to sleep. And it's so scary. Like my body goes like in survival. I'm so scared. I'm so like traumatized and shocked and all of these emotions. So what it has been really helping me is writing down my emotions and writing down that experience. That yes, it's scary, but when I do that, when I write them down, I go to bed and I don't think about them. They don't pop up in my mind. So this is the journey that I'm on. Right now, I am in the trenches of it. At some point, I'll be okay. At some point, this won't even matter, right? But right now, I'm processing this. And I really feel like it came up because I feel safer in my reality. It is a good sign. It is always a good sign, right? I do think the more you build your life and the more safe you feel in your reality, the healing gets deeper. The more you are facing the really scary, dark stuff that happened to you, the more you are, seeing and processing what happened to you. I do feel like safety is such a big step for it. And every time that I upgrade my life, right? Every time that I build something that I want to build, and every time that I create more safety in my life, a lot of old trauma resurfaces. And that's a natural process of it. And again, I am grateful that I do feel safer in my life. So this is popping up. But right now, I'm in the trenches of it. I'm in the trenches of healing this. And it's so scary to face something traumatic, especially at the beginning. I think the beginning is the hardest part. When you go through the beginning and you already like face a lot of things and you are already like at the middle end of healing, I think it's way easier. But at the beginning, the first step, it's so hard because it is really scary to see a traumatic experience. It takes a lot of years and time for you to even like begin to think about it, right? And that's a journey of trauma. Like when trauma happens to you and a traumatic experience happens to you, you can't process it immediately. You cannot even think about it. Like you are trying to send it to the back of your mind because it is so scary and so traumatic that you cannot even think about it at the beginning, right? And I think that's super valid and super normal, right? So I'm trying to show myself compassion in taking this process slow. I'm really doing the healing so I can sleep at night right now. I'm just really expressing it so I can go to sleep at night without thinking about this person because this person has been haunting my sleep time. And for example, thinking about it doesn't quite help me. For me, expressing it does. Writing it down, speaking how I feel, like letting it out of my system. I think that's really, really helpful. If it gets stuck in my mind, I don't think that helps a lot. If I keep it only in my mind, I think I just ruminate about it. But I do think like expressing it is almost letting it out of your system. The more you write about it, the more you speak about it, is almost taking out these thoughts out of your brain and this experience and processing this experience. So I've been trying to focus on that, even though it's very scary. to see that moment in life. And it's really, yeah, right now it's hard. It will get better. I know, I trust the process. I know the process. I've been through this 1,000,000,000 times.
Yep.
But right now I'm in the trenches of it. And hopefully one day I'll be able to speak about what happened to me in this situation. So this has been my past few weeks. I do feel like I'm in a better position of life. I do feel like I'm slowly building my life back up. And I'm very grateful for the position that I am now in life. I do feel safer. And again, that's when you feel safe and when you are happy in life, that like the really difficult stuff pop out in your mind. And that's a normal process. And that's actually a good sign. It means that you are creating more safety for yourself. So I do like where I am right now in life. Of course, nothing is ever perfect. Of course, I'll always have to face some challenges, face some experiences, and heal some experiences. But ultimately, it's leading for me to have even more safety, more fulfillment, and more happiness. And today, I kind of wanted to continue the story of my love life. I swear, this concept of my love life. At this point in my life, I've given up on dating and love and all of that because I'm just too traumatized. I'm just too traumatized. I don't want none of it right now, maybe in the future, but right now, don't touch me. Get the farthest away from me. I want none of that, right? And I wanted to continue the pattern of my love life, dating history. I don't even like to call it that because I don't even feel like it's love or dating. I really just feel it's trauma. It's not even like when I say love, I'm not even saying it's, it almost hurts me to say love because I see love for myself as such a beautiful thing. And this is not love. This is just like trauma of my dating life, right? And I wanted to continue sharing this story because I do feel, especially at the end when I finish talking about this story, like it builds a pattern. It builds a very interesting pattern of, yeah, trauma, of how, yeah, like your pain, your trauma unconsciously creates these patterns of behavior that you don't even realize at the moment. But then you look back and you see the patterns, you're like, what? And basically, this is a continuation of my last episode. And I think there is going to be one next to it that kind of ties the whole thing together. And basically, during my love dating life, there are three major people. And these three major people, I say, it's not that I've been in love like only three times. And again, I don't feel like I've been ever in love. I think I was just like trauma bonded, you feel me? But these three major characters in this story, I think they represent a bigger picture. I think they represent the pattern of trauma of my childhood, or my feeling of guilt so much in of itself. So if you're watching this episode, I recommend for you to watch the episode prior that I tell my first time that I was in love and my first love. That is really very traumatic. And trigger warning, again, for this story, I'm going to talk about SA because my love life and SA, it's very connected, extremely connected. And as I talk about in my last episode, I really think it's a lot of childhood trauma because I was taught a very toxic way of love. I was taught that toxicity and mistreatment and people really using you and treating you so bad, I always thought that trauma was love, right? And I think that stayed with me for a long period in my life, and I'm still healing from it. I'm still trying to figure out what love is, and I'm trying to figure out what love is by giving myself the love that I need and want. I'm not trying to figure out right now what love is with other people. No, I'm trying to first figure out what is love for me, what is loving myself. And I've been really committing to this journey of loving myself for me to understand what is love. Because I think for a long time, I really saw love as trauma. And because I think the trauma that I experienced with my parents, and you think that your parents love you, right? And you have this societally pressure of like, they are your parents, of course they love you, they have to love you, right? And they can treat you so poorly and so badly, but society and they themselves tell them, oh, we are your parents, of course we love you. What I've discovered through this journey is that love is not a word, love is a treatment and it is actions. And that's something that I've been implementing in my life. Of course, like I say to myself, I love you, right? But I think for me showing myself love is way bigger than just I love you. Me showing myself love is being there for myself. It's holding compassion for myself, is holding acceptance and empathy for myself, is accepting myself in all conditions of life, is not trying to change myself, but to hold myself gently through the hard moments. And that's something that I've been really trying to reshape, this concept of love, so I can have a healthier dynamic with me. I'm not ready at all to step into a love connection with another person, maybe in the future, but right now that's not even what I have in mind. I'm just really trying to go to the foundation of it and reshaping my concept of love. Because, yes, I think because of the mistreatment that I suffered through my parents and this idea that that is love, I think you do it as a child, as a coping mechanism as well. Like, you are a child that needs support and needs love, that you see your parents as a source of support and love. And even if they don't give you that, you kind of start to interpret it as that, as a way of surviving because your needs are not being met. And you kind of create this illusion of your needs are being met as a way to survive when in reality, it wasn't, it isn't. And I think that's carried with me until this day. And I'm going through the healing of redefining love for myself so I can show up with myself with more love. And I can, see love as love, not see love as trauma, basically. So this is a story of the second time I was in love. And again, I really recommend you listening to the other podcast because I talk about my first time that I was being in love. Like, he was also dating my best friend at the time, right? And I felt super guilty. And then she essayed me with a random guy. And this is all this story. Listen to the other episode. So, the second time that I was in love is similar story. These stories are very similar, and at the time, I did not understand and I did not see the patterns and the similarities. You don't see the patterns and the similarities when you are in it. You only see it after you get out of it and you start healing and you look back and you're like, "Oh my God, this was the same thing all over again." So the same dynamic of guy love bombing me, dating a friend of mine, and essay, all of them are together in my love life. And I repeat this cycle over and over again. So the second time that I'm in love, okay, there is this guy. I'm friends with a girl, right? And we are friends, and this girl starts dating this guy. Okay. And this guy basically he does the love bombing to me, right? He goes, like, he sent me all these text messages, like, you're so great, I'm so in love with you, all these things. Like, he really showers me with love and does the whole love bombing process, right? And he does something that at the time I didn't like it, but now I really despise it. That is, you know, when people, you will do this thing that you will speak badly about my friends. Like, imagine he was in a relationship with her. And he will come to me and talk badly about her. Like, she did this, I don't quite like it. And he will tell me, like, you don't do this thing. Like, you are the person kind of that I'm looking for. At the time, I did not like that he did that, that he put kind of my friend down to build me up. And now I really despise it. I think that is such a manipulative strategy to put other people down to kind of bring you up. And I think that's such a, it's so manipulative. It's kind of saying that this person is doing this, so I don't like them. But you are doing that, I like you, right? And he's kind of setting this status of behavior of what they desire. Imagine, he's almost saying to you, like, don't do this because I don't like this through other people. And I realize this, like, when people do that, imagine, when people see other people doing something that they don't like and they express it to you, they're almost saying to you, like, if you do this, I don't like you. But if you do the opposite, I do like you, right? And I think this is a very controlling, manipulative strategy that now, biggest red flag, I'm walking away. No, at the time I didn't like it, but again, I'm young. I'm at this stage, I'm like 15 or something. Like, I don't see this pattern fully. I don't like that behavior, but I don't overthink about it, right? So this guy is showering me with love. He's doing the whole love bombing process, right? Like, send me all these text messages, praising me, he's saying that he's unhappy in his relationship and that I will be so much better, right? But they are dating. And me, I kind of learned my lesson with the past relationship of, I cannot be with you while you are dating her because I'll feel so guilty. I already know that I cannot do that because I'll feel so guilty about it. But the thing is, this process of love bombing, it works on me. I'm obsessed. My mind is consumed by this man. All I think about is him, like, every day, all day, what is he doing? Like, how can we meet? Like, I'm creating all these scenarios and fantasies in my mind, and my mind is obsessed, right? Because again, I think this is also a big part of narcissism. They do like the whole love bombing thing to kind of trap you. And I think I'm so used to this in my household. This is what they do always. I'm seeing this as love. And I almost don't have control over my mind. I don't have control over this obsession. Like, I'm just obsessed with this guy. I'm obsessed with him. All I think about is him. Right. And, but because I already knew that if I did something with him, I will never forgive myself. I already knew. I felt so guilty the last time. I can't do this. Like, I will feel super guilty. So I did nothing. I will keep him away. Like, my mind, I'm still obsessed with him, super obsessed, but I'm not taking action, right? So basically they break up, but I still feel very, like, I can't do this. I can't be with him. Even though I'm completely obsessed with him, my mind is consumed by him, I can't do this, right? Because I know if I do it, I'll feel super guilty, and I'm not doing that. So I'm kind of 15, I think, 15, 14, 15, something like that, when this happens. And they wake up. I'm still friends with a girl. I'm friends with a girl for a few years, and then we are not friends anymore, right? 3 years pass. 3 years. Free. And I am still Obsessed with this person. My mind is still consumed by him. Like, I can't stop my mind from thinking. I wish I could. I cried so many nights obsessing over this guy. Like, I remember going to bed crying, like, so obsessed with him. Like, all my mind is thinking about him. And I'm thinking, I can't do this. Like, I'll feel so guilty, right? So I go 3 years fantasizing. My mind occupied by this guy. So I go for years obsessed with this man, right? And this man really just like love bomb you and didn't care about me, right? Gave me nothing. Like, he will do this very manipulative strategy that he did this until a few years ago, and I blocked them on all social media. I'm like, I'm done with this. Bye. Get out of my life. I'll not be surprised if you're watching this. If you're watching this. So he will do like this thing. They'll be like, okay, love bomb me, right? I'm obsessed with him. And you will, I think when you will notice that I am starting to not care, because I will do this thing that I'm going to show that I not care. I'm going to show that I don't care about him. I don't think about him. I'm going to show that as a way to, because I knew that will make him come back. I knew if I show him that I didn't care, he will come back if I didn't care about him. And I think when I will do that, he will come back. Is this concept of Uber, that again, very narcissistic thing. They basically love bomb you. So you get like stuck in the fantasy and expectations. And yeah, your mind is stuck in there. And then they don't care about you, or they diminish you, or they devalue, right? And when they feel that you are drifting away, when they feel that you are, yeah, getting away, basically they Uber. So they go back into your life. They do a bit of the love bombing again. So you continue to be in their web, like you continue thinking about them and obsessing about them. So during 3 years, this is what this man does to me, this man, this guy, whatever. So I'm obsessed with him. When I try to move on or get over this, he comes back, he loves mommy a little bit, and I go back being obsessed with him. 3 years go by like this, okay? At this point, I'm not even friends with the girl that he was dating when they were like 15. You feel me? University starts. I go to university my first like year in university. I'm like 18 at this time, right? And in the first semester, oh my God, I feel, why did I do this? I don't want to blame myself. I look back like, why, Lori? We start dating. I still feel guilty about it because he dated a girl that I'm not even friends with at this point, but I still feel guilty about it, right? The guilt is there. And the guilt, what I didn't realize at the time, is what was driving most of my love life. The guilt from like the girl from last episode that I betrayed because I was dating the same guy that she was dating. That guilt consumed me. And it was driving me through most of my love life, right? And for most of these dating experiences. So we start dating and we date for like a semester. Every time that I'm with this man, imagine, he's not even great. He's not even cute. Like, when I look back, I'm like, oh my God, I was obsessed with what? Like, I was so consumed by with what? Every time that we are together, imagine, I'm nervous, I'm giddy, like I'm building up, like I'm trying to be the most awesome person ever, you feel me? Every time that we are together, I'm nervous, I'm trying to be something I'm not, to please him, to appease him. And he's a type of person, a type of narcissist, that he has a lot of, it drives a lot of ego from like intellectual pursuits. But that type of person that reads books, I'm like, I'm so intelligent. I'm a writer. And when he writes, you barely understand what the hell he's writing, right? But he's the type of person that is like, I'm so intellectual. I'm so intelligent. I read so many books. I'm this and that. He was like the type of person that feels very big and entitled by being like an intellectual, right? So I'm trying to go there, like, I don't know, like reading books, trying to be intellectual. I think I'm a very intellectual person, right? But I'm trying to fit the standards of being intellectual, because that was his ego main point, that how we drive his ego from, and his confidence was like, I'm intellectual, because really this man has nothing to go for him besides that he reads books. And and every time that I'm with him, I'm trying to, you know, be something that I'm not, trying to like fit my likes to his likes, make him love me, trying to look for his approval and love and all this, right? So we date for a semester, and imagine, I've been obsessed over this person for years. Like, I'm so, I think I'm happy in this. I'm really not. I look back, I'm like, I'm not even being myself. I cannot even be myself around you. I'm trying to be something that I'm not, to try to make you like me. Like, hello. But because I was obsessed with this guy for so long and we finally dated, I thought I was happy. I thought I was fulfilled. I was really not, but whatever, at the time I thought. So we dated for like a semester, you know, 6 months, something like that. And guess what? He breaks up with me, right? And when he breaks up with me, like, I cry, I'm super like down bad, you feel me? I'm super sad. But this was the moment of like, Lorena, it's done. Get over them. Stop. Like, no more obsessing over this guy. No more thinking about him. And I really try my best. Even though that you cannot fight these things, you really have to heal them. You cannot, like, when you are in the trauma bond, what I've realized, you cannot force yourself to stop thinking. It consumes you. It is your trauma. It is a trauma response. You feel me? Like, your mind takes over. You can't control your body and mind to stop thinking, right? You have to go into the root and heal and give yourself the love that you want from that person and all of that. And now I know that. But at the time, I didn't, right? So we break up. He breaks up with me. And I'm like, okay, this is it, Lorena. You are going to forget about this man. You are going to live your life, right? And what happens next is, I have a lot of traumatic moments in my life. And this period of time, this next like 2 years, is one of my most, I didn't even say most, like, it is top three traumatic moments, traumatic experiences. I go through what it feels like living hell. I go through the next 2 years, experience so much SA. Every week I was being SA'd. Every week I had like a random man stalking me on the streets, a random man touching my body without my permission, a random man just putting his pants down and start playing with themselves in front of me. I went through 2 years of every single week being essayed. And I almost look at this period as a nightmare. It almost doesn't seem real. Even going through it, I started to question my reality. I started to question what was happening to me. Also, this is when I really started up-leveling my escapisms. Substances, alcohol, that was really strong during that time, because also, again, I'm already a very traumatized person, but I'm going through one of the darkest, most traumatizing, top three most traumatizing periods of my life. It's just like trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma. Like, it's just like bad things happening every day. Like, every day gets worse, right? Every day, I fear for my life more and more and more. During the next 2 years after we break up, I really go for a lot of essay. And this is like, there are so many stories of it. I have so many stories of those 2 years that every one of them deserve an episode. Like every single story I will tell in the future, and I'll break it down by every single story. But I go through the most scary, dangerous, traumatic experience of my life by just random people. I cannot tell you how many times a man looked at me in the street at a boner and starts touching himself in front of me without my consent in the street, broad daylight. I cannot tell how many men just went to me, touched my body, like grabbed my ass, grabbed my breasts without my consent. I cannot count how many times I thought I was gonna get punched by men because I was saying no to them touching me. I had so many experiences where I felt so helpless because I was being constantly essay. But if I said no to this, every time that I said no, they would threaten me with physical violence. I think this man really saw me as property. I think I was really seen as an object of their possession. Like, I think my body and myself was seen as properties to them, like as something they were entitled to. I don't even have consent of you touching my body or not. I have no choice but to be touched and to be. It see things that I want to see, to experience things I have no consent on, to go through experiences that are not my choice, are not my consent. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I almost was kidnapped also during this period. Like, I went through 2 years of every week I was S8 by random people in the streets, random men. And then it's that type of thing that you are really alone in these situations because I think I also lived in a culture that really saw women as objects of pleasure, that really perceived woman as property. And imagine I was being essayed every week, and every time that I would talk about it or ask for help, people would blame me. Like saying type things like, what were you wearing? Or the thing that I got the most is, you are being essayed because you are too nice. Because I was not being, I don't know what they expect from me. Like, the logic here is that I was being too kind and too nice to people, and that's the reason why I was being essayed. Even though when I was not too nice, when I was mean, I was threatened with physical violence because this man looked at me as property, like I had no choice. They look at me as entitlement, like they are entitled to touch my body. They are entitled to expose themselves to me. They are entitled to this. And I went through such a dark period of my life, a very week of being essayed. And when I spoke about it, I was victim blame, like it was my fault because I was too nice. Or even like people would question my sanity, and I questioned my sanity. I was like, people say to me, oh, why is this always happening to you? You must be doing something, right? This is always happening to you. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why this is constantly happening to me. I have no explanation. I don't feel like I'm doing nothing. I'm just like trying to live a normal life, like trying to go to school, trying to go to work, trying to get the bus. I cannot begin to describe how many times. I was in a public transportation and the guy next to me had like a boner and he was touching himself looking at me. I cannot describe how many times a man just came up to me and touched my body with my consent in broad daylight. And every time I spoke about it, it was my fault. Because I'm the object, right? I'm the woman. They are entitled to my body. They are entitled to touch me if they want to. And I think that's something about the culture of Portugal that I really despise. I really can't. Like, I think Portugal has a lot of culture of seeing women as objects. And I think that's extremely normalized. And I think a lot of people, and not all people, women, but I think also probably some men, you feel me, go through these experiences. But because it is so normalized, it is normal to them. Like, if you talk about it, like, you're being overdramatic. Like, if you have a problem with it, you're being crazy and overdramatic, and it's not that big. I think a lot of people in Portugal, a lot of women, a lot of men, I bet as well, that go through these experiences, and because it is so normal, they just see it as normal. And this is what the status quo is, and this is how life is, and you should just accept that. And I really struggle with that. I'm like, I'm not gonna live life as an object. I'm not an object. And I think this is another layer to this, because one, I'm a woman, right? So I'm already perceived as an object. But because I think I'm considered attractive, I'm not saying that I'm attractive, because I see beauty in different ways than other people. I see beauty as more personality. Like, I'm not a very visual beauty person. I like more the depth and the profoundness of it, whatever. Because I was always seen as attractive. Like, I always had like a curvy body, curves. Hell on earth. Hell on earth. I have so many stories I'll tell during my podcast, but it was so traumatizing, because I think the more attractive you are in these types of mindsets and culture, the more trauma you're going to experience. I think being beautiful in cultures that praise beauty is a dangerous place. Because I think a lot of times we think like, I don't know, I think as a woman, there is so much pressure and so much value on how you look. Like, I think I was so taught that so much of my value of a person is how I look and how I appear. Like, the more beautiful I am, the more a good woman that I am, kind of. And I think that was so instilled in me, and I think it's very cultural in many cultures. I'm not just talking about Portugal. I think many cultures are this way, where the value of a woman, it's on their beauty. Like, you have value in society, and your function in society is to be beautiful, is basically to be an object, like a statue, like a Roman statue of like a naked woman, you feel me? And that's your value as a woman. And I think that was so instilled in me, like, looks, you have to look pretty, like, you have to look beautiful, like, you have to look attractive to the male gaze, like, you have to look this way. And I think when I was younger, I desire it, because again, that's what was instilled in me, like, my father rooming me, all of that, like, so much idealization and pressure to be beautiful, right? And I think I did achieve that beauty, right? I did was considered beautiful in the male gaze eyes and in society's eyes, right? And it was such a curse, because in that mindset, you've been viewed by your beauty. You're not being viewed as a human with free will, consent. You are being viewed as an object of pleasure. You are being viewed as a thing to hold, to grab, because you are a woman that is beautiful. And I have so much trauma with that. There were so many times in my life that I was like, I wish I was uglier. And it's true. It's true. I'm not, I think a lot of people like say, ah, beauty privilege. And I'm like, is it really a privilege? Is it? Because when you are, there is so much danger that comes with that. There is so much trauma. Like, because you are perceived, one, you are a woman, you are perceived as beautiful. There is so much trauma that comes with that. And I think this idealization of woman being beautiful and feeling like, and society putting that pressure onto you, like as a woman, you should be beautiful. That's your function. You are more of a woman, or you have more value in society if you are beautiful. That's such a trap. Like, that is setting up for, yeah, like you being an object, not having consent. People feeling like they're entitled to your body, and they are entitled to grab you, and they are entitled to pleasure themselves looking at you because you're not a person. You are an object. And until this day, I struggle with this concept of being beautiful. Like, I'm not saying that I don't think I am beautiful. I think I am, but I don't like, I don't like being beautiful. I don't like it. Like, for example, this piercing, if you're watching on YouTube, I think this piercing, I love this piercing. But as you can see, it's like not very conventional. And, you know, like not very conventional. It's a bit unconventional. But I kind of like it because that there is a part of me that desires to be uglier. There is a part of me that desires to not look as attractive. Because imagine, I do like to look attractive for myself, but I hate being attractive to the world. It's so objectifying. Like, I feel like, okay, it's out of my control. I know, like, I can't do much about it, right? It's just how the world perceives you. And I'm very grateful that now I'm in the country that has more less objectification of bodies, and I feel way safer in the country that I am now. And I moved out of Portugal because of that reason. I moved out for many reasons, but that was one of them, is that I was like, I don't feel safe being a woman that is beautiful. I don't feel safe. This, like, we almost have this pressure to become an object. It's almost this pressure of like, you are valued if you are an object, because your role in society and your how society perceives you is an object of pleasure. So you have this pressure to become it, like it's something that you should achieve, and that's something that makes you desirable. Being desired is a curse, because being desired, you're not like being desired for your physicality. These people don't care about you. They don't care about your personality. They almost want you to shut up, you feel me? They just want you for your body. You are just valued for your body. Like, they just want a placeholder. I think being desired and lusted, terrifying. Terrifying. I don't want to be desired. I don't want to be lusted after. I want to ignore me on the street. Thank you very much. I don't want you to come up to me. I don't want you to say that I'm beautiful. I just want to be seen as a human. I just want to be seen by my humanity. But I think, again, it depends on the cultures that you are at. I think it depends on the culture that you are at. I do feel like I'm more human in the country that I'm at. But in these cultures, I'm not a human. I'm a placeholder. I'm an object of pleasure. I'm an object of beauty. And I think in these types of culture, the view woman like that, that's all you are. In a lot of ways, I think I wanted to be uglier to be seen by my personality and to be seen by who I am, because I felt like people almost, yeah, like these people, this man looked at me and they just got consumed by like desire and lust, and they will, there is no no. I don't have a chance to say no. I don't have consent, because this man that look at me and desire me, they feel entitled to that desire. It's my obligation and my function in society to be that placeholder, to be that object. And that's, it's so traumatic. And I think even going through this, experiencing this, talking about it, right? Because then when you talk about it, like, again, there is so much opposition and so much, like, people trying to put you down for, like, talking about your experience as a woman. It's a lose-lose situation. Being born a woman in this type of cultures, it's a lose-lose situation. There is no winning. All you can hope for is the least amount of trauma possible, because trauma you're gonna get. And until this day, like, when I see especially, like, women I feel more comfortable with, in like desire me and see me that way, because I feel like they are more respectful. They are not the type of person to push your boundaries. They're not, usually not the type of people to touch your body. But when I see men desire me, and this happens too much. It frightens me to my core. I'm like, no, stop, like, please don't. And I feel like, imagine, I see my beauty. Imagine, I don't see myself as that beautiful to the reaction that I'm getting. Do I think I'm beautiful to some degree? Yes. Do I want it? No. But do I think I am? Yes. Do I think I am that beautiful to get a much reaction from other people? No. Like, I think a big part of it is the shape of my body, because I'm curvy, and that's very objectifying. I think my body being curvy is objectification maximum level. I think if I, for example, did not have that much of a curvy body, I don't know, probably I'll still be objectified. Like, probably we all go through this, right? But I do think, like, my body is a big objectifying point, but that's the proper objectification. I don't know, being a woman is hard. Like, this world was not made for us to be human. Like, we women are not seen as human beings with free will and consent. I think this concept of beautiful woman, the beauty of woman, is such a dangerous place to be in. And I really struggle with that, because I don't struggle with my body thinking I'm not beautiful. I'm not struggling with myself thinking I'm ugly. I struggle with myself thinking that I'm beautiful. I struggle a lot with that. When I leave out the house, I have to think, am I too attractive? Am I leaving this house being too attractive? This is thoughts that go on my mind. Like, when I leave my house, I look at the mirror. Okay, am I too much? Am I too attractive for the world right now? And really, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you wear. It doesn't matter anything of that, right? Like, I think, yeah, being a woman that is kind of beautiful, like, it's such a trap. Like, it doesn't matter if you wear baggy clothes, if you don't wear makeup, if whatever it is, if you try to make yourself purposely ugly, it doesn't matter. And that's something that I struggle with a lot. And I went a little bit on a rant here, because this is such a present experience in my life, like, the objectification of it all. It started in childhood with my parents, especially my father, rooming me and seeing women as objects. And that storyline continued for the rest of my life. And this period of 2 years that I was constantly SA, it was so reaffirmed that belief that women are objects of pleasure, that our function in society is to be beautiful, is to be an object that other people are entitled to without your consent, without your free will. You don't have free will, you don't have consent, you are an object. And that's your role in society, right? I struggle with that long, long time. And I struggle even like a little bit more, but this is the thick of it. And this 2 years of being essayed every week, I have so many stories that I'll break it down in each episode. But there are so many stories, so many times. And I was like in the midst of it, I thought like I was going crazy because every time that I express and ask for help is my fault, right? And I'm like, how is this my fault? I don't know what to do to stop this. Like, if I could stop this, I would. But this is just how I am seen in society. This is just how I am perceived in society. It is not my fault, right? And I think a lot of times I try to defy the standards of beauty, being like, hey, I don't need to look that beautiful to your understanding. Hey, I like to look beautiful for myself, and my standards of beauty are different from the society standards of beauty. What I consider beautiful might not be what other people consider beautiful. But when I try to not convey people's standards of beauty, of what a woman should look like, I also got a lot of opposition. People like mocked me again with my piercing. I like my piercing, it's a conversion. But people like, you are a cow, you look like a cow. Hey, I'd rather look like a cow then look beautiful. Thank you very much. And I think there is so much rage that I have about this, because even when I did not want to fit into the standards of beauty, because that role was so projected onto me of, I should appease to the standards of beauty because I should be an object of beauty. I should be an object of pleasure. And when I am an object of pleasure, and when I am an object of beauty, I get traumatized, I get essayed, I get touched without my consent, people pleasure themselves without my consent. Like, when I do convey to that, what do I gain? Trauma. And when I don't convey to that, what do I gain? Also trauma. Because people try to put me down, like, you are crazy, you are this, you are ugly, you are this. Again, I'd rather look like a cow. I'd rather look ugly than look beautiful to your eyes. My function in society is not to be beautiful. Me angry, like me trying to calm myself down. But it's true, it's true. And I'm speaking my truth, and I'm done shutting up, and I'm done not speaking about this, because it is reality. And yeah, this period of time was really traumatizing to me. And this storyline of like, I have a friend, dates a man, that man love bombs me, I get obsessed with this man. I break up with this man. Essay, this storyline happens so much in my life. And it happens again. It was like the final, the third, the last one. It did not open my eyes immediately, but when I opened my eyes to this pattern, I was like, I need to stop this. This is not happening again. Like, I need to stop this pattern. And you really stop these patterns by healing and looking into yourself and feeling the emotions. And I think a lot of it was a lot of projections of childhood because of my parents' trauma with intimate relationships, their views on women. I think this is very generational trauma. And it's almost this vibe of they have these belief systems about how they see pleasure and intimate physical relationships and the concept of bodies, right? And I think them themselves have a lot of guilt about it. And I think that was projected onto me And I just mimicked that to learn the lesson. But it was not easy. This was very, very traumatizing. I call this period my, I cannot say the word on YouTube, but my L of being essayed. This was really terrifying. And when you are, again, a woman that is not just being a woman, really, but on top of that, if you are considered beautiful, you cannot complain because it is your role in society. Like, it is your fault. It is what you're supposed to be doing. Being objectified is what you're supposed to be doing. And you cannot complain because if you complain or you did it for yourself, like it is you that is causing this, or you're being over dramatic, or when they say men also go through essay, and yes, they do. Let's talk about it. Let's speak about it, and let's deconstruct why this is happening, right? Because I think in a lot of ways, the objectification of women is also men objectifying themselves. I think when you objectify someone is because you objectify yourself. And I think that's like, I think we all are objectified in these types of mindsets, cultures, and society. I think we all are. Now, with the victim and with the perpetrator, that's also a big thing. But just because that is what you expect from me is not something that I'm going to like, and it's not something that I'm going to shut up about. Because I think every time that I talked about this, I was silenced. The whole discourse of, and this happens to so many women, right? That they speak about this, and there are so many, yeah, justifications and manipulations coming their way, and I don't care anymore. You have done all that to me. You have put the blame on me. You made me the guilty one. You made me the culprit. I don't care anymore. I'm going to speak about it either way, no matter how you think about me, no matter your perceptions of me, because your perceptions of me are not good to begin with. Your perceptions of me at the baseline were never as a person, were never as a human, wasn't as an object. So I'd rather be an object that is hated than an object that is loved. Period. So yeah, this is my second part of my dating life. And this really, again, is to show the pattern of, yeah, being obsessed with someone because of the love bombing and all of that, trauma bonds, and being essayed. And also this concept of love, again, and I think that concept of love that was ingrained in me, again, especially as a woman, especially considered a beautiful woman, like the expectations and the pressure and what I should be doing and I should not be doing, that was really unhealthy for me. And I'm deconstructing that concept within myself, and I'm bringing more humanity to myself and treating myself with more compassion and more humanity. And realizing that none of this was okay. No matter how society perceives me with more of an object or more human, it doesn't matter. I was always a human being. I was always a person that did not consent, that had no free will in what was happening to me, and it was blamed for everything. And I'm grateful that in a lot of ways, I went through this, and I think it also made me realize a lot of my inner bias, because I think, again, you are projected this thing of being beautiful, right? This thing of, as a woman, you should be beautiful. And I think I was projected that a lot of, I should be beautiful, right? And I'm grateful that now I'm deconstructing it. Now I am like, I don't mind being ugly. I don't mind gaining weight. I don't mind being fat. I don't care. Because my value in society is way more than I look like. my value as a person in this world is as a person, not as an object. And I think I'm deconstructing that. And I almost have this inner rebel in me. Like, I don't care if you call me ugly. Like, I think, because at the same time, I'm considered beautiful by society, right? But I'm never good enough, right? There is always some weight to lose. There is always some this to gain or lose or do or don't do or whatever. Whatever. Because even when you are considered beautiful, you are never good enough. Because again, you are seen as an object, not as a person. And an object can always be molded, right? Can always have things or things like that. And I think I'm deconstructing that and being like, guess what? I don't need to be beautiful. Even though that I think I'll forever be perceived as beautiful, right? I don't need to put that pressure on my body, on myself, on my psyche. I don't need to appease to your standards of beauty. I don't need to care about that, honestly. Like, hey, if I gain weight, I'm fat, and so what? Hey, if I don't do my mustache, I have like, I forgot my name in English. Yeah, like if I have acne, I have acne, and so what? And I'm deconstructing that and being like, hey, I have the rights to be human. I don't need to be beautiful. And I think I'm reshaping my value in society way more towards who I am as a person, my personality, my belief systems, how I treat myself and how I treat the world. And I'm putting way more value in that than in my looks. Because again, I think it's very normal to have that insecurities, because even though if you are considered beautiful, you're never good enough, especially the weight thing. A lot of people projected onto me, like, especially my mother, like, you're fat, like, you should lose weight. And I had insecurities with that a lot. But now I reached a point that I don't want to be beautiful anymore. I don't care anymore. Like, please don't see me as beautiful anymore, because I reached the point of being considered beautiful and I realized just trauma. I gain nothing. There is no point in doing this. No, thank you. So I'm deconstructing my value as a person, as way more my personality, my belief systems, who I am as a person, right? Also, I'm grateful that these experiences of love really pushed me to define love for myself. I think if it wasn't for this, I probably wouldn't really made an effort to love myself. I think these traumatic experiences really pushed me to reshape my definition of love, reshape my definition of how to treat myself with love, acceptance, compassion, and empathy. Because for a long time, I didn't know what love looked like. I imagine my definition of love was toxic, and I knew at some point, okay, this is toxic. I call this love, but this is really not love, right? And at the moment, I was like, oh, what is love? What does love look like? I don't know. I have no idea, right? And I think this journey, what I've done was the way for me to reshape my concept of love and for me to give myself love, I basically did a list of, I picture the major people in my life. Like, I picture my parents, my best friends, my love romances, whatever. And I picture these people and I ask myself, how did I want them to treat me? And I wrote those actions down. I wrote these treatments down, and I'm doing that for myself. I have a series on Lord in the Landia that is Love is an Action, where I love myself every day and I do this little action. And those little actions come from this list that I made of how I wanted people to treat me, what I needed from people in these moments, right? And I'm doing that for myself. And I think that really is reshaping my concept of love. And I'm learning how to love myself through that experience, which I'm very grateful for. I'm also very grateful that I'm prioritizing my peace, that I'm not trying to change people. I'm not trying to project onto people things that they are not. I'm learning how to accept them as they are. And if they're not the vibe, they are not the vibe. I'm not going to force the vibe. I'm also very grateful that I feel safer to face some things that I'm scared to face. Yes, I'm very scared. I'm going through the trenches of healing. It is traumatic. I don't like to look at it, but I'm grateful that my body and psyche is feel safer to process that. And I'm very grateful that I had this time to speak my truth. These are things that, again, I was very silent, especially with the essay. I never spoke my mind as truthful as I speak now. I never spoke my points about objectification of woman, like objectification of my body, these standards of beauty that are just a trap, really. And I never spoke about these experiences with so much truth. And I'm grateful that I have this space and I reach a point in my life that I can speak this exactly how I feel. And I'm not appeasing to other people's opinion, and I'm not changing to other people's opinion. And I'm grateful that I reach a point where I can just express myself. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a good day or night whenever you're listening. Bye.